I'm Alice.
And I'm Brett.
And this is The Prosecutor's Legal Blues. Welcome to this live episode of Legal Briefs. I'm your host, Alice, and I'm joined, as always, by my amazing co-host, Brett.
Amazing. Barely alive would have been a good...
Barely. I was going to say you're drinking Gatorade because you're sick.
I just want you all to know I'm eternally sick, but I have pulled myself out of my deathbed to come here today to talk to all of you about this very interesting breaking news story, which is why we're here, right?
So. This is so true, guys. As you all know, Brett is always sick. And I did text him to see if he wanted to record. And he said, I am barely alive. But then, of course, we saw the news, like you all did, that there was finally an arrest made in the Idaho murders. And so we decided to jump on tonight to give you our impressions of the docket that's available. He really is drinking vitamin water rather than bourbon. You know how sick he is. And also about the press conference that occurred today at 4 p.m. Eastern and what's happening over the weekend and about the person who's been arrested. And we're going to say his name because his name's been all over the internet. And as soon as he gets, I mean, his name is already out on the docket, but as soon as he gets his initial appearance, the complaint will also be unsealed. And so the person who was arrested yesterday was Brian Koberger, who's 28 years old, and he was arrested in Pennsylvania. He is a PhD student in criminology in Washington, which is just a 10-minute drive from where the four victims lived. So that gives you a little bit of background. In case you didn't know that was happening today, that's what happened today.
It's interesting, Alice, because when we did our Moscow thing, I talked about the Palouse, you know, and how, and we were talking about the Palouse, and we looked at the Palouse, and we found out there are two universities in the Palouse.
You did.
One of them's Idaho and one of them's Washington State. And who knew that was going to come back to actually matter? But
no kidding. And the Washington State is really interesting because I think everyone had been so focused on Idaho, the state of Idaho. And until you said that about the Palouse, I don't think I had realized how close it was to the Washington state line. Okay. So for those of you who maybe didn't watch the news today, good for you. Good for spending time with your family because we are talking to you on New Year's Eve. So Merry Christmas for everyone who celebrated. Happy Hanukkah for everyone celebrated. Happy early New Year's. But it is also, in terms of the way the court system works, a Friday. And that is relevant because the new year falls on a Sunday, which means the state and federal, basically, court systems are going to observe Monday as a holiday, which is why the next hearing in this case isn't until Tuesday, which is a really long time for all of us to have gotten this news and sit around and think, what is happening? Which is why Friday night we are here pulling Brett out of his deathbed to talk to you guys about what's happening, why it's happening over the next 3 days. But just so you know, this is what the timing is about. He was arrested late last night, I believe, or yesterday, probably after the courts closed. It takes some time to get paperwork in order. And the Tuesday really is really the next kind of open court day because of the holiday coming up. And nothing is unsealed yet, as you probably heard today, as it should not be unsealed because he has not been had his initial appearance.
And this is completely different from what happened in Indiana, by the way. And somebody, you know, what we were getting messages from people who were like, oh, another sealed affidavit. Like, what's going on? No, the affidavit is always sealed until the initial appearance. Like, you don't get it before he does. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like this is going to follow the normal course, that he is going to go, he will be arraigned, he will have the charges read against him, and that affidavit will be unsealed, just as it is in all most cases. And then we'll have that and we'll have more details. It does not sound like they are going to take any sort of extraordinary steps to try and keep this under wraps. And, you know, it's hard not to compare this to Delphi because two big cases, everybody's following, two big press conferences. And I definitely was struck by the differences between the two. And I just want to say two things right off top here. Number one, congratulations to the police in this case, both the Moscow police, the Idaho State Police, the FBI. You know, they got a lot of criticism. And we talked about in our episode, you know, told people like kind of pump the brakes on this, you know, just because maybe their public facing thing like is not satisfying you doesn't mean that the behind the scenes investigation is not rolling along. And it sounds like they really did a great job here. They really nailed this down. You know, we're early days yet, but it doesn't seem like this guy was an easy guy to find. He does not seem like he was somebody who was closely connected to these people. He may have been connected to them in some way. We don't know that for sure, but it doesn't seem like he's not an ex-boyfriend, for instance. So this wasn't somebody that you expect you'll find in the first 48 hours. And the fact that they were able to nail this down, I think they deserve a lot of credit. And I think, frankly, some people probably owe them apologies. And those people are the same people, point number two. So praise to the police, boo to the true crime, not all the true crime community, but the true crime creators who spent the last 6 weeks slandering people. And it turned out that none of those people are involved. And I don't know. I feel like this happens every time. Every time there's a big story, multiple people get accused of doing something that they had nothing to do with. That poor history professor who's having to sue the one crazy TikTok person. The two traumatized roommates who it seems like had nothing to do with this whatsoever. The ex-boyfriend. The poor guy who just wanted a burrito or whatever for the food truck. You know, there were just a lot of people who got caught up in this. And maybe we can all learn a lesson from that, but probably not.
Absolutely. But, you know, right before we started recording, we have not talked to each other about this case at all. The only thing I said to Brett was that was a really well done press conference. The fact that this arrest was made and none of us knew what was going on. There was nothing leaked. There was no indication that this guy was a suspect, whether on Reddit or Twitter or anything else, shows you actually how well run this investigation is. We don't know what the probable cause is yet, but clearly there was probable cause for them to be able to move so swiftly and then to identify him, by the way, literally across the country. He's probably home, I guess, for the holidays. But the fact that none of us had an inkling this Brian guy was even on the police's radar shows it is a closely held investigation, as it should be. And in the midst of 7 weeks of intense scrutiny and critique by not only the true crime community and people at large, but like people close to the investigation, like family members, that none of the law enforcement buckled. No one within the investigation desperately gave any information they shouldn't have. They didn't comment inappropriately, and which is all really good, because if this person is unknown to the victims, law enforcement did not want to tip him off either for either destruction of evidence or for him to flee or anything else like that. They wanted everything to be as normal for him as possible until they had their case. Remember, we say you only need probable cause to go for an arrest warrant, but you as a prosecutor, you need beyond a reasonable doubt so that you don't lose this case, especially when we're talking about a quadruple murder. And I think they did that all very well. And then, obviously, at today's press conference, we heard not only from law enforcement, we heard from the prosecutor himself. And I can tell you, he probably studied the Delphi press conference, and he is clearly an astute prosecutor. There's a reason he explained the process so well to everyone, because he did not want, over the long weekend, for all of us to be spinning our wheels saying, what's in that sealed affidavit? What's happening? You know, what aren't they telling us? And then for people's lives to be ruined in this kind of 3-day span of the holidays, where people start going online and saying, you know, this is Brian's family, this is his ex-girlfriend, this is etc. He wanted to nip it in the bud, and he made it pretty clear in his very direct manner of explaining the procedures of sealing documents in advance of the defendant getting brought back to Idaho, and made it clear they're not going to seek continued sealing of the document.
Yeah, you know, the prosecutor, he just gotten finished his big work day of the year on Christmas, delivering presents to all the children of the world. And now he's going to turn around and put this guy in prison. He is definitely the most, if he is not the president of the real bearded Santas, then there's a missed opportunity. And that's a real thing, by the way. International Brotherhood of the Real Bearded Santas.
Just to show you how mature we are.
I mean, very, very jolly looking guy. I mean, he was, I don't know. I couldn't get past it. But not only jolly, but my wife and I were watching it together, and she said the same thing. And she was just like, wow, this guy is really good at just breaking this down for everybody. and laying out exactly how this is going to go, I was really impressed by him. And it just, there were so many things about the press conference. Number one, the police were just very clear that, and look, maybe there'll be some accomplice at some point. I seriously doubt it. But the police are very clear. Like, this is our guy. He's the one who committed these murders. And, you know, be vigilant as you always should. But this case is solved, basically. I mean, they didn't say this case is solved, but they basically did. And they certainly said this is the guy who did it. Very clear about why. And we talked about this with Delphi. The Delphi press conference, they said, hey, keep giving us your tips. We want more tips. But they didn't really explain why. And there were a lot of people who, as people often do, whenever there's any kind of information vacuum, ran with that. This case, they did the exact same thing, but they explained exactly why they wanted that. They said, look, keep sending us the tips. Now you have his name. Now you know exactly who we're talking about. So this should raise things for you, and you should think about things. And so now they want to hear from people, not just random tips. I mean, they got like 20,000 tips, 19,000 tips in this case. They conducted 300 interviews, but now they want tips about him. They want to hear about, you know, all of you have already read rumors about him, whether they're true or not, about the way he behaves and the things he does. And they want to hear all that, because all of that can become important in the eventual trial, even if they have rock solid evidence, which I think they probably do. I mean, there are already rumors that there's DNA. Be interesting if there's DNA. He has no criminal record, so he wouldn't be in CODIS. There are people who say that his DNA has already been matched. That is only possible if they did one of two things. Number one, genetic genealogy, which is a possibility. Don't know. I don't know if that's been speculated or not, but it's certainly possible. Also, we don't know how long they've been looking at this guy. We know in the press conference they talked about they've had a lot of sleepless nights, which indicates they've been sort of triangulating on him, making sure they had everything together, getting all the arrest warrants together, organizing the way they wanted this to go down. They obviously didn't want to tip him off. They didn't want him to commit suicide, anything like that. Flawlessly run operation when it came to arresting him. But we also don't know, you know, did they collect something? Did they follow him to a coffee shop and get his cup and test his DNA? We don't know, right? I mean, that'll be kind of interesting to see if it's true that they've already matched DNA, how they did that. So I don't know. I was really impressed by the press conference. I feel like it's funny because it doesn't actually matter, right? It's kind of like every time a college football team hires a new coach, he gives his first press conference. And people act like the first press conference is a really big deal. Like, oh, well, he came up, he won the press conference. It was really great. Or he did terrible in the press conference. It's like, doesn't matter at all. Doesn't win a single game, right? Same thing with these. You know, the Delphi press conference was kind of eh, but who knows? They may end up having the greatest case known to man, right? And this press conference was amazing. And we'll just have to see if their case is as solid as their presentation was today, but I feel like it's going to be.
Yeah, and another way, you know, other than Santa prosecutor giving kind of the greatest breakdown of legal process I've heard by anyone on these press conferences for the layperson to understand, you could tell by the way they were answering their questions that all of them, law enforcement and prosecutors, had been fully briefed on exactly where the line was going to be. It seemed like everyone was on the same page. And they said that a couple times. They thanked everyone that there was no kind of jurisdictional wars between the law enforcement entities. And you could tell because every single one of them had been briefed about what they were going to say and what they were not going to say, which is absolutely appropriate because remember, what's coming next? A potential trial. You don't want to say too much. You don't want to give away too much. You also don't want to taint your jury pool, that whole thing. And they had lines exactly rehearsed for how to answer questions in a way that it could be frustrating for the public, but it's not frustrating when you are the ones who don't care about anything but a conviction at the end of the day. And what I saw across the board was like a very well-briefed team, even though they're all coming from different offices. One thing to know as well, I know a couple people said, oh, you know, the FBI were there watching for 4 days, probably. So these arrests that go down, especially for someone who is being accused of something as heinous and as egregious as 4 murders, is going to be labeled somewhat as like high danger. High danger because he has nothing to lose. Brett mentioned not wanting to tip him off so that he doesn't kill himself. Also, he has a lot to lose. So anyone who's coming to arrest him, there's going to be high, high, high level of danger for all of law enforcement because this could be a situation where he opens fire and tries to kill everyone. Like, whatever, I've been caught, you're all going down with me. And so this is not going to be a quick filing of the complaint and arresting right away. Rather, they probably had this complaint drafted. They probably waited until it was between the holidays to get enough agents on hand to make sure, remember, there's no routine during the holidays. That's important because law enforcement, if they're moving in on a target who is known to be dangerous, need to know routine. So it's a lot easier to arrest someone if it's a Tuesday at 11 a.m. because a lot of people are at work on Tuesday at 11 a.m. Middle of the holidays, you're not in your normal house. You probably don't have work. You're probably with visitors. This is a kind of a high stress situation. So I would not be surprised if his home where he was staying was actually staked out for several days to try and make sure that the highest level of security could be available for not only the arresting officers, but also his family that he was staying with and also the neighbors, because this was clearly a house he was staying in and there was a community around them. And they had to think not only about the person they were arresting, but everyone it could affect. So just to put this in context, like, thank your law enforcement guys. I mean, these guys probably did not spend Christmas with their families, and they have probably been sitting in the dark, in the cold, in Pennsylvania, in cars that are, you know, nondescript cars, taking turns and shifts 12 hours at a time or so, taking boring notes about Brian's coming and goings to make sure that they are keeping everyone in that community safe. That's just to give you guys a little bit of background about why maybe the arrest didn't happen until Thursday. Now, I don't know what time it happened, but I think it was later in the day, which could be the case. Even if you were going to get someone arrested before noon, it's hard to get them into court the next business day because of all the paperwork, especially if the arrest warrant is across state lines. So even though the arrest warrant is out of Idaho, they probably knew and tracked him all the way to Pennsylvania. And that's why the feds are probably involved. I don't know who actually made the arrest, but a lot of instances, it's going to be a mix of like the U.S. Marshals and the FBI, because they have cross-state resources to coordinate and help execute a warrant from a different state. And they all have kind of ways of talking to each other to initiate this sort of a SWAT team that came in to make this arrest.
And, you know, law enforcement's like everything else, it's a bureaucracy. So a lot of times it does take, it just, the wheels of justice grind slow, as we've said before. And so, you know, the whole process, which let's talk about something boring that for some reason some of you are just really interested in, because we get requests to talk about it all the time, and that's extradition across state lines, right? So that's something that's going to happen here. He was arrested in Pennsylvania on an Idaho warrant. I don't know if most of you knew this, but there is an extradition clause in the United States Constitution. It's not one of those clauses that gets studied a lot, but I will read it to you. A person charged in any state with treason, felony, or other crime who shall flee from justice and be found in another state shall, on demand of the executive authority of the state from which he fled, be delivered up to be removed to the state having jurisdiction of the crime. So that is the extradition clause of the Constitution. So the way that works, as it says, is if you are arrested in another state, if you do not waive extradition, which you can, you just waive it and then you get sent back to the other state, it's not a big deal, then the governor, the executive authority of Idaho, will issue a demand to Pennsylvania to deliver the person to them, at which point they can seek habeas corpus remedy and say that they are being illegally held. And at that point, you'll have to have a hearing to determine whether or not the arrest was lawful. Now, this is a very low burden on the government. There are four things you have to show, none of them of which are difficult to show. Number one, whether the extradition request documents are in order. So, did you mess up the documents? Number two, whether the person has been charged with a crime in the demanding state. Got that one. Number three, whether the person named in the extradition request is the person charged with the crime. So confirm their identity. And four, whether the petitioner is in fact a fugitive from the requesting state. So are they in a different state than the one in which they were charged? If the answers to all those things are yes, then you get extradited. And that's why you always waive extradition. It's just a complete waste of everyone's time. There's really no point in doing it. He's just going to sit in jail until extradition takes place. So might as well go ahead, be sent to Idaho, and get this party started. So extradition in states, I mean, it can be a big deal when it's from country to country. It will not be a big deal here. He'll be extradited And he will be charged, as we've been told, with 4 counts of first-degree murder and with burglary, which in Idaho will make him eligible for the death penalty. Idaho has a very broad death penalty statute. Aggravators that make you eligible for death penalty include murdering 2 people at once, so we have that here, but also committing murder while committing a burglary, which we also have here. So he is definitely going to be eligible for the death penalty, and I would expect this will be a death penalty case.
Absolutely. So yeah, extradition. Okay, so let's talk about once he gets over here. I assume that, you know, once extradition is put into motion, they're going to have him here as quickly as possible because there's a lot of attention on this case. And the prosecutor here, just the way he talked at the press conference today, indicated he wants the probable cause affidavit out there because he doesn't want speculation to happen. That doesn't help his case, right? Those tips coming in, it doesn't help him if people are just wildly speculating. It helps him to have specific information because he probably has a lot of what he needs. Now it's kind of just cherries on top of his case. But we have had extradition cases, which can take weeks, if not months, because of kind of the administrative red tape that it takes to get from jail to jail, and especially across the entire country like this. As simple as like getting the defendant onto a plane at the right time to get over, especially if there are COVID protocols, if there are suicide watches, that sort of thing. And so I think in this case, there's so much attention. You know, the New York Times have covered it. Wall Street Journal have covered it. This is clearly a case that grips the entire nation. I think they will move quickly. But just so you know, typically extradition could take a long time because there is a lot of red tape that stands in the way of getting someone physically from one state to another.
It takes forever to transport somebody.
Yeah. I mean, even within a state, it can take forever, especially forever. Because I don't know what the COVID protocols are now from each jail to each jail, but most prisons and local jails still have a lot of pretty strict COVID protocols, especially when it comes to boarding an airplane. It could be 3 days worth of negative tests, you know, that sort of thing. And then if one of your officers or agents who's escorting him comes down with something, not even COVID, the flu, name the millions of things that Brett's come down with so far this week, any of those things can delay it. And so just so you know, if this process is delayed, I don't think it will be because, again, of the attention. It may be as simple as administrative red tape, not because somehow there's a wrench thrown into the case.
Now, let me just say, somebody asked a question just now about something that happened today that I actually don't have an answer for. And that's that this court order that stopped them from cleaning the apartment. And it was a little weird because there was a question asked during the press conference about why they stopped. And the answer that was given by the officer was there was a court order to stop. I don't know where that came from, because ordinarily the court doesn't just order things, right? I mean, ordinarily someone would have had to have made a request. I don't think just a random judge would have been like, huh, here they're cleaning that apartment. They probably shouldn't do that. Let's issue an order. So I don't know if initially the police had said you can do it, and then they asked them to stop and they said we're going to need a court order, and so they got a court order. I don't know exactly how that all went down. You know,
just so you know, remember, for those who may have forgotten, the court can't usually move sua sponte, which means without someone asking them to move. And so you usually have to have a party ask for a relief from the court. So I saw that headline too. I know several of you have asked that question about the court order stopping the cleaning. I wouldn't read too much into it, except that it was, again, probably one of those administrative things. It could be as simple as the landlord saying, like, I am tired of like being the death house. You know, this is going to be harder to clean as time goes on, and I am losing money every day that, you know, someone's not living in it. Something like that. It could be as simple as that. This is my private property. You're going to have to make me not clean it up or something. So just know that no judge stepped in out of nowhere to do this sua sponte. Someone asked them to, and it was probably something pretty germane like contract law.
So I do want to talk a little bit about this guy and who he is. You know, he's 28 years old. Initially was reported as 25, but it appears he's 28, and a PhD student in criminology of all things. And we talked about he must have some connection to Pennsylvania. I'm sure that's going to come out more. I'm pretty sure his entire family's from Pennsylvania. We know that he received his associate's degree from a community college in Pennsylvania in 2018. He was at DeSales University in Allentown, Pennsylvania, where he received his bachelor's degree in 2020. And he completed his graduate studies in June in criminal justice there. And then I guess he was in a PhD program at Washington State in criminology, which is a very sort of, I mean, the irony there is thick, right? And you just have to wonder, is this one of those people, kind of like Ted Bundy was in law school, and you just wonder, is there some connection there that this was just sort of his obsession? You know, he was sort of obsessed with crime and the perfect crime, getting away with crime, and somehow that all sort of channeled together. There's been a lot of talk about this post on Reddit where he supposedly, and I think this is pretty much confirmed. If anybody in the chat knows this to have been, you know, debunked by now, let me know. But according to reports, about 7 months ago, he made this post in the prison and ex-con subreddits, inviting users to participate in a research project that he was doing. So he's doing a research project where he wants to understand how emotions and psychological traits influence decision-making when committing a crime, which is just as creepy as you can imagine. And the post says, you know, he's doing this study. He wants to understand why people commit crimes and sort of what they felt while they were committing these crimes. He was doing this as part of his DeSales studies. Apparently he was doing it with a couple professors there, and he said it had been improved by their review. And he has a survey, and the questions include things like, why did you choose the victim or target over others? What was the first move you made in order to accomplish your goal before leaving? Is there anything else you did? I mean, just, now, I mean, frankly, I feel like if you read that survey before, it would have been a little weird, but now, super bizarre.
I have nothing to say to that. I mean, I've seen, it's not strange, obviously, if this was just a research project, but obviously with hindsight 2020, I have nothing to say, except this is not funny at all, but I was like, wow, he's just really committed to his thesis. Like, I don't know what was in his mind when he did all this. And clearly,
and I don't know if he'll end up being like a Leopold or Loeb type, like he wants to commit the perfect murder. Like, maybe that's been something he's been obsessed with for a long time, and this was his opportunity. I don't know.
We'll see. The chats are coming so quickly. I'm like doing a terrible job of trying to read people's questions. So I'm really sorry if you guys have asked questions that have flown by. It is not on purpose.
Well, I'll say another thing about it. I think the fact that there were people who thought this was a college student, and that never made sense to me, right? I mean, I just never thought this was somebody 18 to 22 that did this. And this is almost perfect because he's still a student, so it gives you the connection as to why he would be involved with these people. I think somebody said, you know, when Washington State kids go to the city or to the town, they're going to Moscow, right? I mean, there's a lot of interaction between these two universities. But he's 28, and that makes sense to me. It makes sense to me that this is a little bit older person who did this than just some random kid. And now, is there a connection? Who knows? You know, did he know them somehow? We don't know yet. There's been a lot of speculation about that, whether he was stalking them or obsessed with them or whatever. I'm sure that'll all come out. We're going to know a lot more once the affidavit's unsealed. And hopefully they will be able to move quickly to move him to Idaho so we can get to that point. You know, people have asked, well, why couldn't they tell us what the motive is and all this other stuff? All of that's going to be considered part of the investigation. They were never going to say much as long as they're not only dealing with sort of the sensitivities of the investigation, but under a legal obligation not to discuss anything that might be connected to that probable cause affidavit, which has not yet been unsealed. So we're going to know more soon. I know people have a ton of questions, and we still have a lot that has to be uncovered. But I think your curiosity will, if not entirely, will be sated to some extent once that probable cause affidavit is unsealed.
Yeah, I agree, Brett. And I think because of that, it doesn't really benefit anyone to kind of speculate about his motive here. We will know more. It's impossible to know more. And I think it only can hurt people out there who may be completely innocent to talk about his motives. You know, we know exactly what we know. And once we have the affidavit, you can better believe we'll probably do this medium again, because this is working way better.
Yeah. I mean, it's nice that so many of you could get in. Y'all have been complaining about the 100 person limit on the Zoom. So maybe this will finally solve our problems, and we can try it this way. The answer to your question, we will do this more. I mean, we don't see your faces on this one, but
yeah,
we always like talking to you instead of just at you.
This is true. This is true. Wow. There's almost 500 people here. That's awesome. Not bad for a Friday night. Brett, is there anything else we want to cover tonight? I know it's late and you are like, you know, teetering on the edge of consciousness, and we want to preserve you for the probable cause affidavit, if nothing else.
You know, I don't know that, I think we've covered pretty much everything that I wanted to mention. If anybody has any quick questions at the end here, I know one person had asked about some filings in the Delphi case. I assume you're talking about the request for funding for a private investigator. That's very common. I mean, basically everything that's related to his defense that is a legitimate defense expense will be paid for by the state. And the defense attorney just has to file requesting the funding, explaining why they need the funding, and they'll get it. So that's not unusual. It's not strange. And just that's typical. And that's the way it's going to go.
That's great. We love you guys too. Well, thank you guys for joining us on such short notice on a Friday evening on New Year's Eve Eve. It's always great to talk to you guys. We will keep a close eye on this and many of the other cases. But in this particular case, I think we're all relieved that for the victim's sake that an arrest has been made. I am given a lot of confidence in the prosecution and the law enforcement who's running this investigation based on today's press conference. So go watch it if you haven't already. And we'll know more. We will know more probably next week. And until then, I'm Alice.
And I'm Brett.
And this is the Prosecutor's Legal Briefs.
See us. This is new. We need people in the chat to say that you can see us and hear us. Be good too. Anything?
Can we write in there? Can we ask by comments?
All right, guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you guys for jumping on.
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
Happy New Year to all of you. And we'll see you soon.